Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Tyler, I think there's no question we know where we need to start. and that is QT Marshall. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about him being late to make the save? No, that was, I mean, there's a lot of starting points we could have on tonight's show, but that match that we just saw conclude was, I haven't seen if Mick Foley has commented on it yet, but that was a memorable, star-making, brutal, hard-hitting, visually amazing, hardcore battle for the ages between John Moxley, between Britt Baker and I mean, that delivered.
Yeah, I mean, it was more of a death match than what we got on the pay-per-view between Omega and Moxley, that's for sure. I mean, not that wasn't a peaceful exhibition, but this is amazing. I am a big fan of death matches in general, and this I think delivered. I think it's about as far as you could go on cable TV, but man, they delivered a lot of blood. Both women just, I think, are big stars after something like that. It was amazing. And, I did not think that they hyped that up very much besides to say it was the main event. And I think that's the only thing, not to be negative, but that was something that should have been hyped for weeks. If they knew how good of a match this was going to be, I was very impressed.
Yeah. I normally like gush about any match that has thumbtacks or blood or whatever. I need more elements to come together for me to really heap praise on it. I mean, of course, I, for lack of a better term, appreciate the sacrifice and the work that goes into a lot of hardcore matches. And I'm, if it's not my thing, I also get it's a lot of people's thing, but this just, there was something about it that I think grabbed me more than usual in terms of the body language, the facial expressions, the intensity, the story they told, the sense that they were not just setting up stunts, but like fighting, and the stunts were part of the fight. And I think one of the things that kind of turns me off sometimes to these types of matches is it's like, hey, guess what we're going to do next? You're going to love it. And this was more like, I'm going to use this to destroy you. It was very focused on hurting each other, and it wasn't performing and trying to score points for creativity. So, I mean, I want to watch it back, and I will, to look for potentially anything, where I think it came up short. But, I mean, on first viewing, it was one of those things where it just sort of pulled you in emotionally, and you're just standing there wide-eyed watching what's happening. And really, that's, the best kind of match, especially if you do a match of this type, you want that effect. And I think they delivered. I mean, I think this is the type of match that fans, when they're in attendance again, will remember, whether it's in 3 months or 9 months, most likely somewhere in between there. I think Baker and Rosa, the crowd's going to be like, I don't care what they're doing on the show. The first time I see them, I'm going to cheer them for what they did. And one more thing, I'm not for fans cheering great matches. Of course that's going to happen, but that's not the ultimate compliment. Is, hey, you had a great match. The ultimate compliment is, booing a heel, cheering a baby face, getting pulled into the story. And I think a live crowd tonight would have done that, but also once that moment's over and there's some time that's going to go by before crowds are in attendance, I do think fans are going to look at Baker and Rose as, okay, if there's dues paying in this business, you did so, but you did so in a way that pulled me into a really cool main event TV match.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. And, to expand on your point with the, it's just not a total spot fest. Like there's a lot of, especially on the independent circuit, when you have a match with, let's say, Light Tubes or something, you'll just have spots where you just wait each other's turn to smash each other with stuff. And this match was psychologically sound. And it definitely, I think we could critique the build to this from a AEW framing perspective on these two, but it definitely felt like two people who hated each other and really wanted to, you know, end each other's careers. And, yeah, I agree with everything you said. And this is the match that I want to see when they do this. And obviously I think we can all agree they shouldn't do this very often.
Yeah.
But when done sparingly, you know, once every, you know, year, you know, 18 months, whatever, it can be really effective and be a star building thing for sure. So this is really good. I was not expecting to be this, you know, entertained tonight. And I was very happy with the ending.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with what you said, that you don't want to do this often, because if there's good feedback for this, and then Tony Khan's like, well, let's do this every 3 weeks or even every 6 weeks, it'll take away some of the impact of this. You know, less is more when it comes to doing something of this type, because you want it to feel like it's a big deal when it happens and it's a culmination of something. And that's where, if there's a critique, you know, was the backstory of this enough to justify this, this type of brutality? And if so, if there is a critique, it's like, you know, save it for when it feels more like, you know, where you can match up what's going on in the ring with promos that set the tone for it. And I don't think this match had promos that set the tone for this the way that Moxley Omega did, for instance. And even that I don't give an A grade to in terms of setting the tone. I've seen A grade builds to death matches, lights out matches, hardcore matches. Neither of these were A grades, but this just didn't have the kind of the quantity and the intensity going in. And I don't really know how you follow up on it. So, yeah, if there's any kind of critique, it's like, that was so good, you should have saved it for when it counted more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it just maybe turned into an amazing match when maybe they didn't think it was going to be. I mean, I'd be shocked if that was the original plan to be the main event on this show, and it was just so good that they called an audible and made it the main event. So I think everyone was kind of surprised by, you know, what we got, Tony Khan included. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they decided to headline with this because of the lights out stip. And I think they do believe in Britt Baker. And I think Thunder Rosa has been the most valuable addition to the roster during the pandemic era on the female side. So, you know, I could imagine that they had high expectations and it probably exceeded them. But I thought this should be the main event. Like, if you're going to have, you should have women in a main event TV match sometimes. This seemed like the time to do it, not only for the women involved, arguably your top two female stars right now, but and that's arguable. Obviously, there's the champion you might bring up, for instance, in that situation. But really, I mean, you could argue that these two are consistently delivering great performances. So, or in different ways, you know, Baker through her injury in a more talking role that established her personality. So I feel like this was main event worthy when you add the stipulation to it. And too often women's matches feel like they're okay, we'll put it on at the bottom of the second hour and hopefully you stick around for the match you care more about, the main event. We just are trying to do our duty to live up to our equal time, you know, type thing for, not that it's equal, but, you know, giving a fair amount of time to women each week. This just felt like a match that belonged in the main event. But like you said, and AEW's guilty of this sometimes, and I think they should have done more for Darby and Scorpio Sky last week. If you're going to have a main event match, like, build it up during the show and build that anticipation so that when the intro starts and the bell rings, you're geeked up about it. You're like, yes, this is what I've been waiting for. I can't wait, and the time is finally here. So, yeah, I mean, we're you know, picking around the edges here of something that that is, you know, obviously a good aspect of this, unless – you're just against this level of violence and gore. And I am sympathetic to that. I don't like this in big doses. I'm okay with it. And in fact, you know, can get into it when it, again, feels like it's part of a fight and not just, hey, look at what we're doing next. And this passed that threshold for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully this, you know, leads to a lot more women in the main event of shows like this. Hopefully the rating, it's all good for them to go with that. And, you know, I think this is proving that there's a lot of talented women that are just as deserving as men and getting the spotlight. And we've talked about this lots on the post show through, you know, the last couple months of, you know, maybe 9 months ago, it didn't feel right just to shoehorn it in there because they weren't ready. And now I feel like we're at a point where, you know, there's a lot of women on the roster who are ready for that spot and put on great matches. So I'm super excited about that personally.
All right, well, let's introduce ourselves and get to calls and emails. We've got a lot of them. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, March 17th, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the founder, editor, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter. We just published issue number 1,712 weekly editions today and mailed them out to our print copy subscribers. You can get details on a paper copy home delivery subscription if you want to take a break from screen time at pwtorch.com/papercopy. I don't plug that enough, but you're certainly welcome to go old school and have a reason to look forward to going to your mailbox. And also the digital edition is up for VIP members probably later tonight. So be on the lookout for that. Greg Park's feature column on the Andrade situation, my cover story on WrestleMania and comparing it to other past years when it comes to special attractions and how this seems less than usual by a pretty good margin, and more. So check that out if you're a VIP member, or go VIP to get a digital PDF or all text copy, pwtorch.com/goVIP for details for an online membership. And when you go VIP, usually these plugs get edited out, not always, but all the commercials and the longer plugs do. So go VIP and have a streamlined listening experience. And now we are on Apple Podcasts. We are compatible. When you sign up, we have a secret link that will give you a secret URL that works as long as you are a current VIP member. And it is one click and boom, there it is on Apple Podcasts. It's as easy as it's ever been. It's the easiest sign up for a podcast you'll find. You get that email once you sign up, you click, and your iPhone is synced up to the VIP feed. So that's new this year, along with several new podcast series. So we hope you'll go VIP, support us, and check it out. My co-host is Tyler Sage from the Podcast of Honor, and also he covers AEW Dynamite on pwtorch.com. His reports run alongside mine, so you get two different perspectives and a different set of details on what jumps out to us. Tyler, welcome to the co-host chair.
Hey, it's great to be back, and I am, I'm excited about tonight's episode to talk about it. It's a lot of up and down, and I think we'll get a lot of good calls about it, so I'm very excited.
Yes, speaking of calls, you are invited if you're listening to our live stream. Well done, Tyler. You can give us a call and join the conversation. We love to hear from new listeners. If you're listening to us on delay by downloading the show, you are welcome to join us after Dynamite ends. And same thing for Raw and SmackDown. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night, you can go to WadeKellerPostShow.com, and that'll take you to the show page. We also have a link to the direct show page at PWTorch.com in my TV reports. And also we tweet them out at PW Torch right around the time the show ends. So lots of ways to find us and stream live, and you can call us and listen. If you are listening to us live, you're invited to call 347-215-8558. That is 347-215-8558. You can also email us, WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. If I fail to mention that, that will flag you on the switchboard as wanting to join the show as opposed to just calling to listen in and standing by to maybe join later. A couple programming notes. We had an early flagship edition on our Blue Logo show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. So if you didn't hit refresh on the blue feed, go ahead and do that. Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks and the host of Wrestling Night in America, the Sunday PW Torch Daily Cast, joined me. We spent an hour and a half, roughly, talking a lot WWE, a lot AEW Dynamite, some impact from NXT, some Peacock Network, and more. Covered a broad array of topics, including some fallout from Raw. So that is up right now. And then tomorrow night, the Blue Logo Show will feature Sam Roberts joining me once again to preview in-depth Fastlane on Sunday. So that will get you, as I think conversations that Sam and I have, get you all set up for what to look for and what to anticipate and exploring a variety of different directions different matches can go. It's always a great time with Sam. That should be about an hour and a half of a in-depth Fastlane preview. So check that out tomorrow. But first things first, we got more to get to, obviously, on Dynamite. We've only covered one match, and had that match not been there, there would have been plenty to choose from to talk about. We'll let the callers lead the way for a while, and then we'll get to some emails, and anything you guys don't cover in calls and emails, we'll round out as the show progresses, too. Let's go to our first call, which is area code 111. It's showing up as 111, probably a Skype or international call. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, it's Hinton from London, Ontario, Canada.
Hey, and good to hear from you. So what do you want to talk about regarding Dynamite? A lot of choices.
Yeah, I want to start with the main event. I've got a little bit of a match analysis here. First of all, I think it was really good. I think that this propels the women's division to another level. The women should be really proud of themselves. And I'm really glad to be able to actually analyze an AEW women's match now, which can't say I've been able to do too many times. So I don't think it was the most well-executed no DQ match I've ever seen. Certainly one of the better ones I've seen on television. I wouldn't call it memorable as Wade calls it, because match needs to have a good build and good story going into it in order to deserve that. And there's also a couple of poorly executed spots. Thunder Rosa clearly looked like she was setting up for that Reba table bump standing there. But I think it was papered over by a lot of the good stuff. But I just want to pivot to the build and just want to make a couple of points regarding the commentary. So the build, I kind of agree with Tyler Sage. There wasn't enough of it. If you think about it, they were just kind of running into each other's matches, and Britt Baker was just trying to move on from Thunder Rosa, and you know, she kept getting her stuff in on, you know, or getting into her stuff on mid-card angles, and then the producers of the show would just never, like, they just never let those segments breathe, and they just move on straight to the next segment. And I don't think the build deserved the unsanctioned stipulation. I think something like just no holds barred, no DQ, that probably would have been fine. I don't think any match in AEW so far deserves the unsanctioned stipulation, to be honest, but that's just my opinion. However, they did their best to live up to the stipulation, and like in a vacuum, if you just look at the match, I think that they delivered to the best of their ability, and that the women deserve a lot of credit for that. Not so much the bookers. And just a couple of notes on the commentary. I was happy JR at least had some life, some energy in the main event, but there's a couple of points where, and I don't know who said this, but I think at the end, I think it was Tony Schiavone who said, if she wants to cry right now, I wouldn't blame her. I thought that was a silly thing to say. There was also some ignorant commentating, like Britt pulling when Britt pulled out the bag, and JR's like, you know, I have no idea what could be in there. And like, JR, of course you know what's in there. So it's like
a I could imagine Schiavone thinking that, but for JR to join in, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my match critique. Is there anything that I added to your original takes?
Yeah, like I said, I want to go back and rewatch it and pick up on everything. There was so much going on, and Tyler, you know what this is like. You're trying to type up what's happening. And also, by the way, I get ready for the after show. So I want to go back and watch start to finish with my eye only on the TV screen, not bouncing back and forth. And I it's possible I'll change my view to some degree. But I've tried to frame my review on things that I think are largely unchangeable, which is, it seemed, with you know, an exception that Hint pointed out, it seemed like they were fighting not to set up spots, but to beat each other up and win. I thought that there was a smoothness to a lot of the exchanges, including just crawling around and wrestling around on the tacks, and then having that, you know, lead to the roll up and the leverage. The pace was good. So anyway, yeah, Hint brought up a lot, including the announcing and other aspects. Go ahead, Tyler. Anything jump out to you?
Yeah, the announcing I agree with. I can't remember what JR said exactly, but I know fellow Torch member Emily Fear had the exact line that JR said. It wasn't ideal, you know, not battered women, but somewhere along those lines. So, yeah, a little questionable in commentary, but, you know, that's kind of AEW style at this point. And, yeah, I think in general, you know, if you're looking as a hardcore analyst, yeah, you know, I agree with Hinton on a lot of the points, you know, with the build and all that sort of stuff. I think in the moment, you know, the normal opinion is that this is a bloodbath and both these women are stars. And there might be a couple things that are not exactly perfect in the ring. And then from the macro, you know, 30,000 foot view, I think what's going to be remembered is, you know, the Stone Cold Steve Austin-esque still that we're going to see of Britt Baker, just bleeding like crazy from the forehead. And that's going to be the memory of this match, is those two, you know, laying intact with blood everywhere. And, you know, I think in a year, 5 years, 10 years from now, that's what we're going to remember from this. So all those are important, and I think all of them are valid as well.
I don't know if Mick Foley is listening live to our show, but I said I don't know if Mick Foley had seen it, but I'm interested in what he has to say. It just popped up on my Twitter feed on my screen. Sounds like I need to catch this match. Where can I see it? So, Mick, if you're still listening, you can watch it on TNT. It aired live. I don't know if you DVR it, but there's probably a way you can see it, but yeah.
I think it's Mick kayfabing his Legends contract there by acting like he doesn't watch AEW.
Well, he did. I mean, he retweeted it. So, all you know, AEW's official collage of photos with thumbtacks. So, but speaking of Twitter and hit, I'll get back to you in a minute. Lots of praise online for this, and no shock that there would be, but from official AEW channels besides the Mick Foley comments, from official AEW channel, Tony Khan said, "What a great main event." Thanks to everyone who joined us. The culmination of a classic rivalry as a four-month story paid off in one of the greatest and most memorable main event matches ever on Dynamite. Taz said that was effing crazy. Mad respect, all caps, for those two women to fight that level of brutality, passion, physicality, intensity, and violence. Congrats to them. Jim Ross said massively proud of the effort and passion displayed in tonight's Dynamite main event. Bravo, ladies. Tony Schiavone applauded, said, well done, two amazing athletes. Stick a push pin in me. I'm done. So lots of positive words. Mike McMahon from PW Torch is recording tomorrow's show now on the for the PW Torch Daily Cast. That'll go up tomorrow night. So be on the lookout for their take on this also. Rich Fan said that match had me in a parking lot hooting and hollering. And Joe Donnell, a frequent co-host here on the post show, said, what a bloodbath. This is the type of match that creates a Twitter buzz. And, you know, Tony saying a culmination of a four-month feud, yes, I would have liked, like you said, Tyler, a sense over the last couple shows of this being a bigger, an actual, more of a deliberate message conveying this is the culmination, not just sort of in passing giving it sort of equal time to other matches that were on the show. And that's the only critique of the build, but the payoff. You know, memorable, and I think the stuff hitting that you rightfully point out won't be the thing that people remember, thankfully, because I think there was enough good. Hint, I know you brought some other stuff up. I don't know if we covered it all. Feel free to bring that up again or follow up with something else.
Yeah, I just hope that Tony Khan doesn't ride this too high because, like I said, there were some flaws with the match, and also I think he'll just get lazy with builds because, I mean, you saw this with Young Bucks versus FTR. They had a great match with lots of people raved about, but at the end of the day, it's like, if this keeps being reinforced, he's just not going to care much for building. He's just going to be like, oh, well, the match is going to be good, so we'll just wait for that praise to come. And I just don't want him to get into that cycle. That's just something I fear. But I do want to move on from this. I'm sure other callers have their take. I want to talk also about the MJF promo. I really like this. I really like the new faction. One thing I liked in particular is that there was very little in the way of insider jokes, insider references in MJF's promo. And the reason I mention that is because I remember Chris Jericho's Inner Circle formation promo very clearly. It was one of the first things I saw on Dynamite. And one line just kind of stuck out to me. He's like, responding to like I think some fan chants for J.K. Greer. He's like, he said, oh, that was from another company with bad creative, or something like that. And I'm like, there's no need to go that far with dismissing those chants. And I think MJF just carried this a lot better. He's very suited for this sort of role. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes, especially after the Chris Jericho feud. So what did you guys think of this? Think of that segment?
Yeah, as far as your example that you gave, Hinton, I thought that was the best insider line that was delivered on Dynamite ever, because it probably stopped at its tracks the idea that, you know, doing We the People would be a tribute to Jake Hager, and it also said to the AEW fans, we are not here to carry over lame stuff from WWE because it's fun or ironic or whatever. We're here to represent, to reinvent, shake things up. And so please don't do that. You know, like, I thought it served a purpose, but I get the spirit of what you're saying. But that example is actually like the one thing I would keep in of all the insider references in the last year. That's, or however long, that's the one I would have, that's the one I would have kept, because I think it, you know, I think it works, you know, when you have Jericho with his credibility telling fans, don't do that crap here. That said, it is specifically one of the things I really liked about the MJF promo, hitting, and I wrote it in my report at pwtorch.com after the segment was over. I liked that this was straightforward. You know, MJF can do a lot of things, and granted, he made a joke about Sammy Guevara and Chris Jericho being about as far apart as his pecs, and it's like, whoa, he went there. I think he had one other line that was kind of, you know, clever, but in terms of insults, but It was straightforward. It's, here's who we are. I'm arrogant. I had a master plan. Everything was a ruse. We always planned to have this be the group, the pinnacle. And I thought it laid the foundation and covered the bases, and it wasn't going for the one-liner of the week. He went for two of them, but it wasn't littered with them. And it wasn't insider references. It wasn't trying to score points with the internet, which would be hypocritical of MJF's character to even want to do that. So I liked it a lot. Tyler, in your commentary, if I remember right, you didn't like it as much as I did, I think. Talk about that segment and why.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was okay, and I think not every segment needs to be the greatest segment of all time either. I read this as a little bit of a reset for the audience, especially when MJF ran down, here's every member of the Pinnacle and why they're important and why they're special. You know, I thought that was fine and dandy. Just for me personally as a viewer who watches every week, that didn't work as well for me because I already have a built-in expectation of all these characters, but... Yeah, I mean, with MJF stuff, it was pretty straightforward. It was serious, which is good. I didn't love the continuation. This is more of an AEW problem holistically of him trying to kind of explain the kind of harebrained nature of the main event last week and how he got one over on Jericho. Took me out of it a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, the group itself, they're serious. MJF's a good mouthpiece. And, it was fine and reset the group and gave me expectations for what they're here for and what they want to do. So I thought it was strong in all those points. I just didn't think it was particularly memorable. And the explaining of last week didn't do a lot for me. It kind of took me out of it.
I like the explanation of last week in the sense that I think there was a lingering question I think I had and some people had, which is, well, what if Sammy hadn't exposed what we were doing? And it's more convoluted than I would ideally set it up to be, which is, well, let me explain. Like any time you've got to explain something the next week, oftentimes you've made something that should be self-evident, not self-evident. And I don't think in pro wrestling that's very often the best approach to take. In other genres, self-evident can work against you. You want nuance and subtlety, and tune in next week and it'll all be explained. In pro wrestling, you kind of want to have that emotional surge when you see something. Not, that doesn't really make sense. If Sammy didn't come out, what would have happened, and why are all these other guys ready? I do think I'm willing to believe, and I talked about this at length on VIP audio over the week, in following up on this, that they did present a situation that you can think, okay, MJF was going to turn on Inner Circle. Sammy beat him to it. And exposing it, and it did ruin some of MJF's plan to blindside them. But MJF planned all along to turn on them, break them up from inside, turn them against each other, and then form his own group that he believes is superior. My optimistic reaction to this MJF promo was MJF was selective. He did not give any credit to Sammy Guevara for seeing their plan, for exposing their plan. He just said it was a ruse all along. It leaves room for the baby faces, Jericho and Sammy in particular, to say, MJF, you think you're this mastermind? You might have always tried, you might have succeeded in causing some strife within the Inner Circle, but you got caught and you had to go to plan B. You know, like there's a way to call him out and go, you think you're the mastermind, but Sammy exposed you with a camera phone. I mean, dude, come on. Who do you think you are? So I think MJF left room for the babyfaces to score some points in filling in some more of the details. So the caveat of you don't want to have it be too convoluted or it has to be explained, Matt Hardy, but you also it's okay to have the heel have his version of reality, frame it how he wants it to be to make him look like the mastermind, but then let the baby faces rebut him. And I'm glad they saved that for next week or the week after, whenever they decide to do it, and let the baby faces have a better framing, a more accurate framing of it that viewers will be more sympathetic to.
Yeah, and the last couple of weeks, I think this is the best version of this. You know, it's better than the Matt Hardy situation. It's better definitely than the explanation last week for the lack of explosion on the exploding ring match. But that was just more my, that's why, I mean, I'm being honest, my holistic view of, is this just going to be a standard AEW practice that when something doesn't get received well, we're just going to explain it the following week? So that was, in the moment, kind of my mindset. So, I agree with everything you're saying, and this is the best situation of this. And if those other two were not present, then I would be less critical about it. So, yeah, that's you know, now I would probably tone it down a little bit, but in the moment that's what I was feeling. But I certainly agree with you on your explanation.
Hinton, any closing words from you?
Yeah. What do you think is Sean Spears' role in this group? The guy's 40 years old, and I was also trying to look for something unique that MJF was going to say about him when he was running down every single guy. You know, he touted Cash Wheeler and Dax Harwood as being the only Grand Slam tag team champions on Wardlow, the best insurance policy. All that makes sense. But then when it comes to Sean Spears, like, it was more like vague platitudes, like, oh, he's always been a top guy, and, you know, he'll prove it. You don't believe me, you'll end up eating a chair shot. I don't know what that was referring to. So what do you think is his role? Well, thanks for the call, and everyone go VIP.
Thanks, Ed, appreciate it. Yeah, they call him, he called himself the chairman early on in AEW, because he was using chairs, and so that's, I guess, his thing, and it's like a pun, get it? He's a chairman and a chairman. It's the new perfect 10, minus the obnoxious finger flicks. I'm fine with Spears being in this group, but not anything, I'm not enthusiastic about it, but he's got the history with Tully. You know, he's 40 years old, he is who he's going to be. You know, I said this on VIP Audio, over the weekend, I think it was, that Sean Spears and always kind of looks like he's really, really wishes he could just tell like a fart joke or something. Like he's got something funny on his mind that's just immature and stupid, and he just wishes he could just be immature and stupid. He's never serious, and I thought he looked serious tonight, and I think that's good. I don't want a court jester in here in the Pinnacle group. So I think he's a body who can take some bumps and has a history with Tully. I think he's expendable in the group. It would be four active wrestlers without him. So if you're kind of looking for that kind of four horsemen type thing, you've got it. I guess you could argue Wardlow's kind of a Big Bubba Rogers type to Cornette and the Midnight Express. But I do think some people look at Spears as sort of the weak link in the chain, and it makes the whole faction seem more Bush League. But I want to give him a chance, regardless of his age and future. I mean, he's got a lot of ring time, but I think he's got a lot of bumps left to give. And so, you know, if he spends 3 years in the Pinnacle and is kind of a utility guy, but can sort of be the Buddy Roberts of the group, making a Freebirds reference, who can take pinfalls in matches, there's value in that also when you want to have a designated loser in tag matches. So I think there's some value there. I just want to make it seem like he's not holding back a dumb joke or a silly thought or wishes that he was on, you know, being the elite and getting to do stupid stuff. Just actually try to be freaking serious. And I thought he was. And so I'm hopeful. Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with that in general. I mean, the two thoughts that I had, especially watching this promo and seeing him as part of the group, is, you know, number one is he's there to eat pins, for sure, to make everyone else look strong. You know, every large group needs that in every wrestling company. And, you know, that is not, you know, a bad thing to be. I mean, it just needs for the story to happen. And also, you know, if you want to take him as a lovable character that he's been in a lot of other places, I could see some situation where the group loses a big match and it's his fault, and MJF takes it out on him and, you know, just enhances his heel abilities by taking out on Sean Spears and, you know, using him in that capacity to kick him out of the group and make MJF look even more diabolical than he already is, I think is a use for him in the future as well.
All right. Very good. Let's give out the phone numbers here. 347-215-8558. We had a couple people just drop off. So, we're going to jump to Javier here, but if you want to be on the caller portion, you can follow Javier. If you think you can follow Javier, then this is a good time to call. The number is 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad if you want to be taken during the caller portion of the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Javier, welcome to the program. He is a PW Torch VIP contributor and podcaster and a frequent caller here to kind of turn the show into a roundtable format at the end of the caller sessions. Javier, eager to hear what you have to say about the show.
Hey, Wade, how's it going?
Good.
Caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
So what did you think about QT Marshall being late for the sale?
I don't even want to pay off the joke.
Yeah, with all the stuff they've got going on, I don't know why they're going to waste time with that, because it's like the 90th most interesting stuff going on?
Yeah. On a show that's so densely packed, I don't really see why that's a thing.
Hey, they keep this on AEW Dark Elevation, so they really paid off on that. So I just want to make sure that's clear.
I was thinking they could have dropped one of the matches on the show and give stuff more time to breathe, because I thought the same thing about the Britt Baker Thunder Rosa. This kind of felt like came out of left field that it was going to be the final big one, because it was like, you know, because they'd been kind of like just bumping into each other here and there, and then all of a sudden it's like wham. Although I was taken out quite a bit at the beginning, because you're having a lights out unsanctioned match, a match that's going to be so violent that they want nothing to do with it, a week and a half after you booked a match where you're blowing up your wrestlers.
So I think I get what you're saying, but I mean, so are you saying don't have the match this soon, or hype frame it differently when you're building up to it? Like, what are you getting at?
Yeah, don't call it a lights out and unsanctioned. Just, you know, have it, you know, there are no rules, hard, you know, hardcore match.
Oh, fair enough. I see. Yep.
Yeah, because, I mean, if because I that was my critique of the barbed wire match, was they should have made that unsanctioned also, because, you know, their first match was already an unsanctioned match, and now you have an even more extreme match. But this one, because it's, you know, and I'm like, okay, I guess it's because it's for the belt and you're going to be like, okay with it. But then 2 weeks later you have, you know, this match where like, oh, we want nothing to do with it. So, so it took me out a little bit for a minute.
I will one up you, Javier, or go a different direction, but take it further. Just don't have lights out matches. Don't have unsanctioned matches. Nobody believes it. Like, nobody thinks on TNT with Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur on commentary, and an AEW referee, that it's unsanctioned. And lights out, people don't even know what lights out means. You know what I mean? So, you know, you can explain it, and Excalibur's like, this doesn't count against their record. It's like, well, okay, whatever. They're fighting, and their records are barely brought up anymore anyway. So, to me, just drop the whole unsanctioned thing. It is a distraction. I just think have no DQ matches or street fight rules or whatever, and let that be a thing. I feel like there's a nostalgia for the term lights out that Tony Khan has, and I think it's not really worth it. I think it muddies up what stipulation is a bigger deal than others, and it doesn't make intuitive sense. So don't make any of the matches lights out, as opposed to, you know, switching them around like you're suggesting, Javier. Tyler, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. Javier's in the show, so I'm going to bring it to New Japan a little bit. And, you know, there's never really any stipulations in any of those matches, and it just kind of is whatever the match needs to be, and the promotion flexes in and out. You know, if there's a table, that's fine. If there's not a table, that's fine. And, you know, I think that's the best way to do it, is to basically just have standard matches, and whatever needs to happen can happen, and we as a wrestling audience will go with it and probably not have too many issues with it, as opposed to, you know, kind of how we're talking about this. So,
yes. Javier, back to you.
Yes. What did you think about the Moxley Kingston stuff? Because I enjoyed the their back and forth. You know, it was funny, but without being like WWE kind of, you know, scripted lines, basically. Not trying to be funny, but just like, you know, being together, you know, like riffing off each other.
Yes. I just think those two are comfortable with each other, and they are, you know, fun to listen to banter. And so I liked it. You know, there's undeniable chemistry between those two. You know, they play off of each other. They finish each other's sentences. They have comfortable silences, not uncomfortable silences. So, you know, and riffing on the Good Brothers was fun. You know, I mean, Moxley, if this was a scripted WWE segment and John Moxley compared Doc Gallows eyes to googly eyes that you glue on construction paper with kids. So many people be like, oh God, they're writing crap. What is that? And they dwelled on it. But I found it, like, knowing that Moxley and Kingston were into it because they get to do their own stuff, it worked. Like, it didn't feel awkward or written. It felt like two friends making fun of a bully and trying to figure out how to give it back at him and having some lighthearted fun doing it. So, I mean, my general philosophy with Moxley is let Moxley be Moxley and good things will happen and a few bad things. But it's better than trying to decide which ones are good, which will be 90%, and which things are bad, which will be 10%, and just let him be him, and the bad stuff won't be that bad. But not everything's going to work with him because he's just kind of look at that Steve Austin interview. It's like sometimes things just don't – you can't figure out why, but what he does doesn't really fit into the normal place. But, yeah, I think the chemistry between them and the fact that they just genuinely seem to be kind of having fun and breaking from the norm of, looking into the camera intensely like Mox does most of the time, it worked for me. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I do think to expand on your WWE point, I think they would have probably made a shirt with Gallows and then put googly eyes on it and have Moxley walk out with that. I think they would have just gone to that next level. I think it was good. And, this promo was a lot like when they were sitting in front of the fire, what was it, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And I like it much better than scripted, Dean Ambrose and WWE. But, my only note is, there's probably somewhere in there you can cut 10 to 15 seconds off these and it'd be even tighter, but that's a very slight note that I would have. Beyond that, I think they work well together and I like them as a team. And, I think they're the definition of a baby face, and I'd be surprised if anyone watching wrestling would boo them really for any reason as a team. So it works really, really well.
Yeah. You don't want to come across as kind of like entertained by the sound of your own voice to the point where it just seems self-indulgent and you're just, the viewer is hoping for someone to rein him in a little bit. And I think it was a little long. I don't think it got like bad, but it is an astute observation that segment probably went a little too long, enough worth mentioning, but not to the point of being kind of a big deal, taking away from anything.
Yeah. They're straight on the line, but they're fine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Javier, back to you.
Yeah. And then in keeping with the same thing, I kind of dug the Don Callis Heyman-esque promo where he was telling the Young Bucks, what the hell are you doing with yourselves?
Yeah, I like the Bucks interview. I like the Callis interruption. It's one of my favorite Don Callis segments in AEW. I think it's him utilizing his character at its best by barging in and being ridiculous, but in a way that has an agenda to it. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I liked it too. I mean, I I'm typing half the time like you are, Wade, but did he have a don't slap your leg shirt? Is that what he gave them? It was for a split second.
I didn't notice. Javier, did you?
I did not.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought he gave them a shirt, and I thought it said don't slap your leg.
Oh, God.
So yeah. There's some insidery stuff. So
yeah.
You must not have seen it because I know you would have loved that. But, this is good. And, to expand on it a little bit, he did say New Japan a lot, and I was on New Japan World because I'm doing a report on that later tonight. And they had the match of the Good Brothers versus Juice Robinson and David Finlay up on New Japan World from the Impact show.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot going on there. So just like as a little tea leaf, they said New Japan a lot tonight. And, that was a good sign, I thought.
Javier, back to you.
Oh, yeah, and they also referenced Bullet Club, finally, Kingston and Moxley. Can we say that? Are we going to get sued?
Mm-hmm.
But so does it feel like the Young Bucks are finally maybe, perhaps, like, in a direction, have a direction now that they've not joined in with Kenny Omega after the beatdown of Moxley and Kingston?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, yes. I mean, they're set to defend against Pac and Rey Fénix, but they're also embroiled now in a feud with Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers based on that segment. And then you also have a weird kind of connection now with Jon Moxley and where does it leave Eddie Kingston. It's never crisp and clear with the Bucks. there's a lot going on there. But I like the Alex Marvez or Dasha holds a microphone and someone stands in front of a backdrop and talks. There needs to be more of that in AEW. Strip it down to the basics. Let the wrestlers with just a backdrop get themselves over and talk to the audience. And don't, you know, Callis interrupting was fine. I want to see some Young Bucks interviews where he does, where there isn't an interruption. There isn't an attack. In the early weeks of AEW, remember there was that streak of almost every interview being ending with an attack. It was just ridiculous. Like, you know, what's going on here? The first two matches on this show, or two out of the first three, I think ended with a similar sequence at the end. So, you know, sometimes they overbook and they replicate their booking within the same show or week to week. To me, like, my point is scale it back. Do more straight-up things. Like, I know when people say, yeah, I would have been – the show was so packed, it would have been better if they cut out a match. Like, did we really need Rey Fénix and Angelico? I'm like, yes, I want matches on TV that are not feuds. They're not rivalries. They're also not squashes. It's just about building up your record. There's like, it's round two of the NCAA tournament. You know, or round three. It's like, it's yes, we expect Fénix to win. He's going to pad his record with another win, but Angelico can look good in the process, get a moral victory, maybe score an upset in this situation now and then. And it's a moment to just breathe a little bit and see some good wrestling and give Rey Fénix a win. So, I mean, in a general sense, I'm fine with it. You can quibble and go, you know, should Rey Fénix be in a match against Angelico, winning when he's in a tag team, and what's the point of that? The specifics I'm up for a discussion on, but just in general, more basic stuff to breathe on the show. And part of that basic stuff is like the format for Christian too, you know, not coming to the ring and it's a big ordeal. I'm fine having hold the mic, let a guy talk, and more often than not, please let them finish and walk away. And I thought Matt was good at it. And I think the Bucks are so self-conscious of doing, like, stereotypical stuff. Like, they're dying to make an ironic comment about, you know, oh, look, we're standing here with a microphone in our face. I guess now we're supposed to talk and cut a promo and make people interested in our match so they'll buy tickets and then we'll have more money. Like, no, stop it. Resist that. Just do it. Just cut a damn promo and stop being ironic and explaining things. I know that's your shtick. It's okay to just be a wrestler on TV and not Mr. Ironic Insider, let me explain everything and be self, you know, screen movies, self-aware of everything and explain it. So I like that they did that, and I want more of that. Stop trying to reinvent things and be cute. Just be straightforward. So anyway, there's my sidebar editorial. go ahead, Tyler.
You were 100% right. The Pentagon-Cody match, so Cody rolled up Pentagon, and then he got beat up after he got rolled up.
Yep.
He beat up Cody, and then same thing with Moxley and Anderson. That was the exact same finish on both those matches. So yeah, that was frustrating.
And they do that. Like that's not, this is not the first time. It's not the 100th time, but it's happened, you know, semi-regularly that happens. And I do they have the same agent, and the agent's like, you know, has a sheet and he's like, we're going to just do this all night. I don't know.
Yeah. They're like option C, let's do it on both these. And then, you know, I do think that after the Good Brothers and Moxley and Kingston match, I do think that was, to me, I read that as a little bit of a reset of kind of, you know, when all those guys did the Too Sweet, you know, what was it, 8 weeks ago, 12 weeks ago, too, forever ago, and where it was muddy and where the Young Bucks, we weren't sure if they were heels or faces. And, you know, I thought that segment didn't save everything, but I think it really helped to push, yes, the Young Bucks are good guys. They're not putting up with this. And then also, you know, I thought Kenny Omega being a little bit more serious, even though he's still being odd and himself, you know, that level of kind of, you know, of evil heel, I thought was good for his character, because it's, you know, as I think everyone would agree, it's been off the rails for a while now on what his character is. And you know, not to litigate that to the end of the earth, but I thought him and the Good Brothers came across as, you know, evil and sadistic. And I liked that for his character. So I thought it was kind of a win. For you know, saving their characters a little bit on the segment.
Yes. By the way, my comment about the Bucks not explaining what they're doing before they do it also applies to Cody. He does that probably more than they do, you know. And so that was cool. Now you're on national TV trying to draw a million people. Let's just get to it. I agree. This was Kenny looking like he cared. You know, I mean, there was an intensity and a mission, and he was still true to himself, but reined in just enough to accomplish something and come across as a top guy and not a guy just, you know, goofing off self-indulgently at an indie show or some, you know, some fringe internet pay-per-view or something. Like, this was a definite step in the right direction for Kenny. I've been real down on Kenny to the point where on Everything with Rich Man for VIP members on Monday, I asked if he's even, you know, worthy of a main event spot, if he's not going to show up to work and play the part. You know, and if he's not going to be a workhorse anymore because his body's so beat up or who knows why, I mean, what's the point? He's living off his reputation. You know, he didn't cut a go-home promo before the pay-per-view, which I thought was a glaring omission, and he should have the power to demand it and do it. And Callis is so talented, and that pairing has so much potential. I want to see more, and I want to see them just be, like, okay with being really good top heel wrestler manager and not try to reinvent things or just goof off. And this was a definite step in that direction. And I'm with you, Tyler. I liked it. So, you know, more of that and keep moving in that direction. Javier, back to you.
Did he lose any points when he put the shoe up against the camera and said, now the shoe's on the other foot?
Yes. But you know what? If a lot of wrestling 101 is going on and it's just getting heel heat and seeming like you care and you're into it, you can, you know, that then a little dose of that works. Like, that's Kenny. I don't want Kenny to not be Kenny. I just want Kenny to be a main event act first and foremost, and then find ways to be Kenny within that framework. And I main event acts that draw money have that self-discipline and wisdom, and he hasn't shown it yet. And he has no history of doing it. And he hasn't been asked to do it before. He should be asked to do it, and he should step up with the money he's being paid and the weight on his shoulders as a top guy to take his job seriously. And this was a step in the right direction in that regard.
Yeah, and my brother did text me about the post-match beatdown. He did say, you know, is this like the third time they've done it on the show when it was happening with the Good Brothers?
Yeah.
So, you know, so, yeah. And the one thing I did like about a small detail I liked about that segment was Kingston trying to get back in the ring to be in the ring with Moxley.
yeah.
You know, playing up the, you know, that, you know, he'll die for family kind of thing. So I dug that. One thing I did not dig was the – let me see if I could get this right from memory. The Sting, Archer, Jake the Snake, Darby Allin, Taz, Starks, Cage. Yeah, that whole thing. Yeah.
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 They did a lot there. I mean, I think we had like two turns in one segment. You know, we solidified Archer's a heel, and we got Brian Cage turning on Team Taz. They fit a lot in there. I get what you're saying. I saw criticism of it. I'm not disagreeing with it. I wouldn't want that to be how every segment works. I was sort of sympathetic to the idea of trying to get a lot done in that segment to just kind of move to the next stage. I didn't hate it, but I get the idea of, you know, all that going on. Because, you know, if I'm Archer, I'm like, wait, I just cut this really big promo, like this important promo in my AEW career, really established what I hinted at last week. Jake does the most talking in kind of a straightforward heel manager way in months. And now you're going to bigfoot us with a Brian Cage breakup with Team Taz? Like, come on, you know, like, so I should probably be harder on it than I am. I wouldn't want to book this, but I don't know why I was a little more forgiving, I think, than some of the criticism I've seen. Tyler, how about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of in your boat, too. I think, you know, Darby looked like a big star in the segment, and I think that's what saved it for me. Everyone else, not that Sting doesn't matter, but, like, everyone else has kind of been downgraded, you know, Cage and Archer and Team Taz and all that. So them kind of looking foolish is kind of par for the course. And so I guess I wasn't surprised, and that was kind of my expectation. You know, my biggest critique was just the same format with Sting. I think that's like the baseline for the criticism is like, oh great, Tony's on the stage and Sting's going to come out and then someone's going to come out. You know, I think when you start that baseline, it's hard to win when you're in that segment. But this was you know, a double turn for sure. So they got a lot.
But with completely separate storylines. a double turn in one segment, but completely separate feuds.
I mean, that's one for the wrestling textbooks. That's quite the needle of the thread, and I thought it relatively was done well for, you know, there's just not a lot of juice behind a lot of those characters. So I think that's why I was like, okay, well, that happened. Let's go to the next thing. But I think Darby looked good in his spot. So I think that was important.
Yeah. I like that Darby stepping up and talking. I mean, there's a temptation to have him be the brooding, mysterious, silent type who's sitting in a corner somewhere, expressing himself through paintings on the, you know, spray paint on the wall or art or whatever, but he can talk and I believe him. So I'm good with that. I think it's a more efficient and sustainable way for his character to grow. And I mean, there was a lot in that segment, you know, establishing the Dark Order match next week and also that he wants to be a fighting champion. But yeah, it's so a lot was accomplished, but maybe because so much was accomplished, a lot got lost in the barrage of accomplishments. Javier, back to you.
I do have to say I'm disappointed in the crowd because I knew where Darby Allin was going, that, you know, I won this in, October, and I've only defended it three times. And people start – I'm like, do you not, like, listen to the tone of the voice or do you, like, you know – it's funny because it makes me think of, like, Jay White, when Jay White's cutting a promo at the end. You know, he's the heel, and he tells the people to clap for him, and they clap for him. Like, you know, and he's like, oh, you're all, like, trained SEALs. I'm like – come on. I was kind of embarrassed for the crowd there because it's like, you know, you could tell he and he looked pissed, you know.
Yeah, he corrected him. I like that. I'm impressed when he didn't seem to skip a beat or lose his place, but instead he was just like on the fly, like, no, that's not a good thing. But whenever you're blaming your, like, if you're a stand-up comedian, you're blaming your audience for not laughing at a joke. You might want to also step back the next day and go, could I have phrased it better? And so with Darby, I think, you know, the idea is, okay, they love me. They're going to cheer for me. They're on my side. That's great. But that can work against me if I'm not really clear that what I'm saying here isn't worthy of praise, but instead it's setting up, a criticism of the company not having me defend the title more. So sometimes, stylistically, you don't want to bury the lead. You don't want to do an inductive approach to things. You want to do deductive. State your position and then back it up. Don't provide ambiguous evidence and then in the end draw a conclusion because the audience might cheer you midway. And so, but, you know, it might be a learning experience too for Darby and others to, I am frustrated with how few times I've had to defend my title. Did all of you know it's only three? You're not going to get cheered for that. And make sure there's a someone you're blaming. Circumstances are such where I haven't gotten to defend the title as much as I want. It's only been three times. You don't have to then divert to correcting the audience then.
Yeah, Javier, saying only at first. Yeah, saying only at first would have been a much better way to phrase that. You know, I've only defended this title three times since I've won it. Would have been
I've only been given the opportunity to defend the title.
Yeah.
You don't want to say I've only. I mean, you kind of have to pick,
yeah.
I mean, you got to pick words. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've only defended the title because I've had to be dealing with these numbskulls, and then the numbskulls show up. So it's like, it's got to be, you know, frustrating. And they don't even direct themselves to Darby, which is another. I mean, that's why I felt like it was like all over the place because they didn't even, you know, Darby basically said called them out, and then they come out, and then they, you know, Cage, you know, talks to Sting, and yeah, it was just. I think you're more forgiving because they actually cut Sting off, so he didn't talk.
This is Sting. Would you like to say anything? Nah, let Darby talk. There's a lot to fit into the segment, Tony. I think I'm going to take the night off from talking, and it's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
We're going to hear from Sting, and he just stands there while, like, six angles take place, and he's like wallpaper.
Yeah, he just shrugged his shoulders.
Let's get a cardboard
cutout
for that in the future.
Yes.
It's one of the other things that this is, you know, going into the weeds now, but of the show, basically, it's there was a moment where I think it was Shivani who said that during the Matt Hardy, Private Party Butcher and the Blade, Jurassic Express Bear Country match, where I think it was Shivani who said, we don't talk enough about Bear Country. And I'm like, you're absolutely right. I have no idea who these guys are. I'm concerned that I'm like looking at another dimension, and this is actually like another dimension version of Otis and Tucker. So, you know, yeah, I have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that's Tony's like way to get a slight on guys he doesn't like. That's his like go-to thing is he says that, so it seems like he's nice on commentary, but he's just burying them. I'd like to think that's the case going forward, but.
Javier, anything else on your bullet points?
Well, and I think Marco Stunt owes Butcher a beer because, man, when they chucked him, he saved his life because he looked like he was going to, you know, eat that that barricade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think when they chucked him, they didn't realize how light he was. So, yeah, he almost missed the entire crowd.
Was this a good use of Marco Stunt, or does it put heat on him when he like blind tags in and then just costs his team a match?
Yeah, I think it does.
Is it endearing?
No.
Is it endearing, or does it seem like, you know, God, you know, have some self awareness. You're not big and you're going to lose, so settle down.
I mean, it kind of works, but I don't think the AEW frames it well enough to kind of make it endearing, because they kind of don't, you know, they don't sell the fact that look, he doesn't know how small he is, that sort of thing. So if it leaves it to you, I would say that yeah, I mean, what's he doing? He's an idiot. You know, he can't control his emotions. You know, instead of like selling it as you know, him being courageous or whatever.
He needs to be more Eddie Kingston than he is Marco Stunt in some of his actions, I would say.
Yes.
Yeah. Although I do want to see him do something with Big Show. I do want to see Marco Stunt do something with Big Show since.
Oh yes. Yes.
That that would be fun. But yeah, I think that's pretty much all I've got. Because I mean, the other stuff I wasn't really paying too much attention to, like the Cargill stuff.
Did you pay attention to Christian's promo?
Oh yeah, Christian. Yeah, Christian. So much stuff in these shows, Wade.
There was, yes, I know. I'm keeping track. Matt Carolina email, and I'll use his email as an introduction for a little discussion between us here, among us here. Are you kidding me? A huge game-changing signing doesn't even speak a word in his first two appearances, and tonight he finally gets the mic, and it's a backstage interview. Outwork everyone. Gross. He's already feeling like a bust. Keep up the great work with the awesome VIP content. Matt from South Carolina. I didn't feel that way about the promo, but I get it. I think him not doing it in front of the audience, such as it is at Dynamite tapings, could be an early sign of insecurity or concern that it might not get over or that he may not be as over as he wants. But I just advocated for more interviewer holding a mic and a wrestler talk, and really saving, in-ring segments for, I mean, I would be fine with a one-year moratorium on any in-ring promos. I think the ring should be sacred and for wrestling matches, and there should be backstage interviews and stage interviews. But I know when they're in arenas, that's, you know, not super realistic because people who pay for front row seat, you know, want to be front center for seeing stars who aren't going to wrestle but are going to talk. And I understand that as a concern. But in this case, I was fine with it. But I think there's some things to delve into on the Christian promo and the Christian character that Matt is showing signs of that might be prevalent out there. So, Tyler, your thoughts first on Christian's interview.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. And, I think not to psychoanalyze Matt here, but I think he was definitely disappointed that it was Christian on the pay-per-view. And obviously that is, if you're disappointed in the signing, you're probably going to be a little bit more negative to them. Whatever their initial thing that they do is, and if it's not a home run, if it's not an all-time great thing, then it's going to be, more negatively leaning. So I totally understand that. And I think, if you were disappointed with Christian, I don't think there's really any reason so far to not be disappointed with him as a signing. In the segment itself, I thought it was, right down the middle. He's like a very generic good guy at the moment, and that's kind of all we know of him within the AEW ecosystem, and definitely setting up, you know, he's going to get some wins over the next couple weeks and months and challenge Kenny Omega, probably on a, you know, whatever, summer solstice slam, whatever some summer episode Dynamite is labeled as. And, you know, that's where we're going. And then from a storyline, you know, AEW perspective, I wouldn't want to do a interview out on the stage because, you know, 35 different people are going to come out and interrupt my segment. So the character was smart to do it backstage.
The Bucks got interrupted by Callis, so you're not safe anyway.
That's true. Yeah. Well, he was somewhere I've never even seen. You need to be Miro working out, and only your friends know where you are, or you need to be wherever Christian was. So
or where Darby goes. Maybe there's some freeway underpass Christian could be safe.
There you go.
Javier, before I throw to you, you know, Tyler, you said it's a kind of a generic babyface promo. I think there's some good about what we saw tonight. But my first line in my report analyzing Christian's interview was this. Christian perceives himself as a top guy, and most people don't. Now, that's my opening line of analysis for a reason, because it presents a problem, because Christian has to carry himself as a top guy. He's got billed as a big acquisition, a huge acquisition, and he's being dropped into a match with Kenny Omega. It is not anyone's dream match. Well, I'm sure it's somebody's, but I've never heard anyone go, boy, I tell you what, Kenny, I mean, his career's just not complete unless we see Christian as an opponent. It's just not where Christian is in the dialogue of wrestling fans. And people see Christian as, Edge's friend, and they've played into that a lot. But Christian doesn't want that. In life, he doesn't want that. He is not, and it's fine. I admire him. He doesn't want to be Edge's little buddy. He doesn't want to be the psychic. He doesn't want to be Marty Jannetty to Shawn Michaels. He's spent his career trying to overcome that perception to the point that he left WWE to go to TNA to be a big fish in a small pond and try to prove himself. And then he went back to WWE, and, you know, Vince largely saw him the same way, and fans did too. AEW's got to be careful, because Christian perceiving himself as a top guy and talking as if he is both necessary and ripe to back, has a great possibility to backfire badly, to blow up in their face. Because if they overplay the Christian card, fans are going to blame him and reject him, and it's going to be embarrassing, and it'll reflect poorly on Tony Khan and AEW for how they framed it. But if Christian doesn't portray himself and carry himself as a top guy, if he doesn't believe in himself, who else will? So you paid the money, you dropped him into a feud with Kenny. Christian made it clear he only has one thing that interests him, and that's a match against Kenny in the world title. So it's a combustible, difficult situation no matter how they go, because they didn't bring Christian in to feud with Scorpio Sky. They brought him in and are dropping him in against Kenny. And a lot of people don't see Christian as being at that level. He's got to try to overcome that while being a babyface, while not coming across as an egotistical, delusional, full of himself, 40-something wrestler. And I'm not sure he leaped that hurdle successfully, but I don't think they have any choice but to have him do that. But he's got to become, in the future, less self-centered and find something that people can rally behind. I don't think America is just sitting, that wrestling fans around the country are waiting to rally behind Christian, cementing his legacy. I just don't think that's a cause that people are going to pay money to say, I need Christian to cement his legacy. But that's what he said he's here for. He's got to have something else that's his legacy that's centered more around what AEW stands for and how he's offended by how Kenny is portraying a world title that should have more dignity. And he didn't go those places. So mixed feelings. I thought the delivery was furious and needed to be. I think he's being overpushed. But I'm up for it if he does a good job, and I think it can potentially work. But this has to be the start of establishing who Christian is and the first segment of multiple segments that lead somewhere better than where this ended, because I just don't think people are all that into a workhorse who wants to cement his legacy, who people think sees himself as a bigger star than he is. And that's where this promo ended, I think. Javier, over to you.
Well, and I think even the workhorse reference, while true, that's not how I've ever seen him as.
No.
Because,
no,
you know, he did a lot of the work, you know, so that doesn't even help. So, you know, so you know, for better or worse, I always saw him as the creepy little bastard, even when he was in TNA. So, you know, yeah, the person that he's portraying is not someone I've been able to buy into. And, you know, I'm someone who is very open when I'm seeing an act. I'm willing to see him with fresh eyes. He's in a new company and what he's doing. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of baggage that he's got to shake off. And you know, not a lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't, you know, are going to just mark you with that, with the scarlet letter and just, you know, no matter, you know, I'm not going to let you redeem yourself in my eyes. And he's coming with, you know, the sting from WWE and from, TNA, although I didn't hate him in TNA, but just the fact, you know, when they started bringing the Booker T's and the Hogan's and the Bully Ray's and stuff. You know, I thought Christian was good until, you know, it's TNA. So, you know, if you're aware, but yeah, I mean, so if you're not really the workhorse, and I'm not buying the workhorse thing, we know you're there for Kenny Omega, even though he does say in the promo that he knows he has to work his way up, which all to me said that I was wrong thinking that he was going to be like a named show opponent for Omega. And now I'm thinking that they really are thinking about building a pay-per-view with Christian. So I'm like, I don't really want to see that either. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
he seems to be taking himself a little more seriously, and he seems a little humorless. And I have to be careful because I'm like making the case there's way too many wrestlers trying to crack jokes and be funny. And Miro was a disaster early on. But there's something about just loosen up a little bit. You know, like, he's coming across like he's, you know, like Mark Calloway walking into the locker room and you know, or pick your legendary figure. And it's like, I know that's the career that Jay wanted, that Christian wanted, but it's not the career he has. It's not how people perceive him. And I don't know that that's who he is. And if he's trying to be something he's not, I think fans are going to reject him. And I think that this set the tone, but it is not, if it's the end of him framing his character and it's just going to be repeating of this, I think he is going to be booed when he gets in front of a crowd, or he won't have a chance because they'll, you know, he'll be played out before they get back to live audiences. I think he needs to loosen up, and I think he needs to show some appreciation for what AEW is and a little more humility. I felt that this was that there's an insecurity about him that made him come off way more serious than I think people want Christian to be, because that he's a guy who's hasn't taken himself seriously, and so yeah, it's tough. I mean, I say all this feeling for him because I know what he wants to accomplish. And he's coming in completely differently than Miro, and in that sense, I like him. But this has to be a building block, not the end of character building, and he needs to expand and become, frankly, just more likable and less self-centered. Tyler, back to you.
Yeah, I agree. And like as you're talking, it definitely does not feel, you know, that he's a part of the AEW roster, really. He kind of feels, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but, you know, when he first came out and was going to speak the first time, and then Kenny walked past him and he walked away, and, you know, it feels like he's Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense, and, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, I guess.
Yeah.
But like, you know, just like he's, like, looking around, and it feels like, is what he's seeing actually there? Is it not there? And, you know, this segment felt very detached, and, you know, this is a thing where it'd be great if someone like Hangman Page was in the position he was, you know, a year ago, 14 months ago, and you could team, you know, him and Christian together, and, you know, he could be the friend that Kenny never was. You could tell that story and get him over with the fans and loosen him up a little bit, but not be totally goofy. But, you know, I don't think the Page character is there right now either. So some combination of that is he needs to definitely be part of the AEW ecosystem and not have the AEW ecosystem become all act like him, which is definitely what the vibe is right now. And that is definitely a heelish tendency that I think is unintended at the moment.
Yeah. I think there's a risk that people will think Christian is walking in thinking he's hot shit because he came from WWE and everyone should just part ways when he walks down the hallway. We can't believe Christian graced us with his presence. And that's completely misreading the room. It's misreading the locker room. It's misreading the arena. It's misreading people's perception of Christian. And so there's potential for danger here. But I think Christian's best chance to be successful is to not do Miro and not be self-deprecating. And he does want to be in a pay-per-view main event against Kenny. I think it's fine to declare that. But I mean, you're right, Tyler. This is not a guy who people perceive as a workhorse. Like he didn't do the Japan run where he was just going through G1 and blowing people away. It's like he's a sports entertainer from start to finish and had really good matches, but yeah, he's just not perceived in that class that he kind of threw himself into. So I think there's a danger that people will look at him as someone who is delusional or not self-aware or is trying to fight who he is and not be authentic because he's insecure or wants to use AEW to accomplish something that Vince McMahon would give him. And I just don't know if those are things anyone's going to rally around in the AEW universe. Javier, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, he actually reminds me. I think he's trying to carry himself like Nick Aldis.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good comparison, actually. Yep.
Yeah.
And Nick Aldis can pull that off Miro. If you've never heard of him. If you've never heard of Nick Aldis, he can pull that off in 3 minutes. Yeah. You're like, oh, this guy's – I must not know wrestling very well because this guy is clearly the biggest star of the last 15 years. Like, that's how you feel like watching 2 minutes of Nick Aldis. And
exactly. And since you mentioned Miro, I really did like the what they did with Miro, and it looks like they're seeding a breakup between him and Kip Sabian because he said he's not interested in facing them again, but Kip accepted the match on his behalf. So I'm pretty sure we're going to head into Rocky Waters. So. Which I think would make everybody happy because he was taking himself a lot more serious. So I really, dug the, I really dug this version of him.
I agree. Cool, Javier. Anything else at all?
No, New Japan Pride podcast that should be out pretty soon. I've already sent it out. So, I think my favorite match in the last 2 years. So,
is it a spoiler?
Can I guess?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it the Ospreay Sabre Jr. match?
No, it's Yano O'Connor.
Okay.
I was thinking you're going there. That's why I was like, is it a spoiler? Do we want to? People are going to assume one thing, like Tyler did, but it's something else. So.
Yeah, it was Ospreay Sabre and mainly because of like the breadth of work they've done and what this match meant and. I was really disappointed the fact that it was dubbed and book dubbed and not you didn't have the crowd because now I probably would have gave it 5 stars myself. So, but yeah, it was definitely that. And stay tuned for the Fastlane primer. So,
that's right. Yep. Good luck with that. The mysterious disappearance of the Shane McMahon Braun Strowman match, Javier.
Oh, did it disappear?
Yeah, they pulled it.
So, oh, great.
I haven't, it's been a few hours since I checked in, but I don't know if anyone's had any reporting on why, but it has completely disappeared from anything official. So
I wonder if they screwed up and it was supposed to be for WrestleMania and they said pass on accidentally.
That'd be awesome. All right. Well, I won't believe that what your favorite match was of the tournament so far until I hear the podcast. Javier, still think, I think you're swerving us there.
It could still be Yano and O'Con. O'Con. I keep confusing him with O'Karn. So, yeah. 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 It could still be that, I carry it. By the way, earlier when I think it was Hidden who was talking, I did pop that you compared, you pretty much compared Sean Spears to Yoshihashi. So. All right.
Thanks,
have a good night, guys.
Yeah.
Everyone go VIP, check out the New Japan Pride podcast, a weekly show dedicated to New Japan with Javier Machado and Bethany Ruppel. Just two friends who love New Japan and watch everything and then talk about it. You get to be part of that diner booth conversation, where you just sit and listen to them talk about their shared experience watching New Japan and analyzing what they thought of it and where it's going next. It's a really fun podcast, and I think it's works both for casual New Japan fans and hardcore New Japan fans because they're hardcore fans and they know their stuff, but they're not assuming knowledge, and I think it'll enhance your enjoyment in New Japan if you're a newbie trying to catch up or kind of understand the context of everything. They're not going to make you feel left out or inferior for not knowing everything about everything New Japan. So go. Is that fair, Tyler? Fair assessment?
I would say so, yes. Yeah, it's because, yeah, there's a lot of that on the internet too. So, yeah, I think they both do a great job, being open and just they love the product. So that's the best part.
Yep. All right, cool. Let's hit some more emails. Phone lines are still open if anybody wants to come in after Javier, 347-215-8558. I promise a short wait time if you do want to join us, 347-215-8558. All right, let's get to some emails, and we'll begin with, which one should we do first? We'll do David, who says, I don't think barbed wire, bombs, thumbtacks, and bleeding women are going to bring in that second million viewers that you like to talk about, Wade, and usher in the next boom period. So we talked at the top of the show that this is people are going to remember this, and it is cement that it cemented Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa, and it was their initiation and all that stuff. Is it possible it's a turnoff that, you know, I kind of acknowledge it, that it's not for everyone. It's not normally for me. Is it possible that some people are watching and go, we can't watch this anymore. Like, I can't watch with my family. That was too gory. That was too brutal. I don't want to see wrestlers, women or men, tear up their bodies like that. That type of match is usually reserved for pay-per-view with fans who know what they're buying. And they're that layer of fans who buy pay-per-views. Is there a chance that TNT gets complaints or that some people watch and are like, oh God, that's distasteful. And they actually tune into NXT or just tune out of Dynamite in general?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's 2021. I mean, it's not the 90s where Vince is getting calls or, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there, but I would think if you have that sensibility that you're probably not watching wrestling anyway, if I had to guess. Now, I could be way off on that, but I still strike those as quadrants that are meeting each other. You know, people that are you know, blocking their children's eyes as watching this. And obviously that's not the target AEW is going for either. They're not going for, you know, the audience that WWE is going for, you know, 7 years ago and building that up. They're definitely going for that 18 to 49 male demo to start and then expanding from there. And
yeah.
I think they're just trying to solidify that. And then, you know, whatever happens later happens, but you know, the biggest boom periods and in the business was not getting the younger kids. It's doing stuff like this. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it offended somebody, but you know, I think of someone like Ronda Rousey who became a huge, massive global star. And she was literally doing things like not tax and things like that, but she was, you know, she looked the same and her opponents definitely looked worse than Britt Baker or Thunder Rosa looked tonight when she was done with them. And that got her movies and stardom and commercials and all that sort of stuff. So I just think there's a different sensibility with, you know, you can find 2 million people who would be very much into this sort of stuff. And the rest are not to be worried about, I think, personally. But
yeah, no, I think that's AEW's attitude. And I think there's something to be said for not trying to appeal to everybody, but trying to get a certain segment really, really excited about what you're doing. You just want to be sure that's a big enough segment. And it remains to be seen with AEW if this type of thing is actually going to help them grow and hyper grow in a key demo rather than grow with sort of by, you know, rounded edged product that has a little bit for everybody. You know, the old back of the Raw format sheet is check the box. Do we have two humor segments? Check the box. Do we have this? Check the box. Do we have pop culture references? How many? It should be between 6.5 and 13.2. You know, it's like that thing. It's just, then nobody's happy. Nobody's passionate. And so AEW is like, we just want people to be passionate about what we do. And you know, sometimes that means leaning into something like that, even if you think you're going to turn a few people off, make that your identity. All right, let's go to 919, chimed in here on our caller switchboard. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Kevin. I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona. Actually, I kind of want to echo that last email. I don't know. I just thought it was a little bit too much, actually. And I'm actually in the, you know, the 18 to 49 male demo, but I don't know. It just was a little bit of a turnoff. Like it was just a little bit too much and a little bit too gory. And I think actually overall, it just seems like AEW sometimes relies a little bit too much on blading and blood and the kind of hardcore ECW thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about the 90s, but I mean, a lot of that stuff, I don't know, it's sort of, it's not, I don't know, it's just not really for me anymore. I watched ECW in the 90s, but I've just kind of, I guess, grown out of that a little bit, you know? I don't know. It's just really not for me.
No, that's, I mean, what's that?
Oh, I was going to say, I was just more making a comment, not really a question, sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm glad you called. I mean, it's good to have an emailer, and then, you know, we say, hey, you know, AEW is deciding they're going to lean in on this as opposed to worry about turning people off. They're going to make their identity and differentiate from WWE and try to super serve an audience that likes this. But it doesn't come without risk. I mean, it's why some smart people have taken other approaches to wrestling, which is, you know, keep it kind of in the mainstream middle if you want to be on a network like TNT and save that kind of thing for an infrequent pay-per-view match. And we have another email coming up that is along the lines of Kevin, of you and the previous emailer that we'll get to next too. So I don't think it's something anybody should just dismiss out of hand. But I also don't think it's not accidental. It's a strategy, but in a sense, this AEW company is just sort of Tony Khan living out his fantasy of booking a wrestling company that has all the things that he loves, lights turning on and off, lights out stipulations, you know, on and on. I mean, it's just, this is him reliving his childhood. I mean, he wrote letters to Pro Wrestling Torture Newsletter as a teenager and we published them. I mean, like, he's been a hardcore fan forever. And so it's, you know, part of what we see is Tony Khan going, I like this, I want it on my show. And that's not to patronize his corporate strategy or his creative strategy, but there is going to be, with anyone who's the creative head of anything, there's going to be some indulgences and some proclivities. And we are seeing his indulgences and his proclivities being indulged in. So, and it's going to, you know, does he get it out of the system and then decide, all right, let's pull back on that. I think a match like that should be every 3 years. There was a Rockers versus a Midnight Rockers, Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty against Playboy Buddy Rose and Doug Summers match on AWA TV on ESPN. That's legendary for the blood and gore for its era on ESPN. That's still talked about today. And part of the reason is AWA never did that on TV. I saw blood and gore at house shows when I attended AWA shows, but they didn't do that on television. Like, it just, there was blood in wrestling, but you paid to see it and it wasn't televised in a lot of companies. So the idea for AEW is, yeah, don't overdo the blood as a shortcut to more fundamental ways to immerse people in your storylines. Get, you know, to use a cliche, kind of get your ducks in a row and be efficient at telling your stories and establish your characters and let the blood not be a shortcut for being sloppy in those other areas, but use it to accentuate an otherwise really well-executed company. And so my point in this is, if this is the only time we see that kind of match on TV in the next 18 months, I will look at it better. But if they just go back to this because it does good numbers and they got good buzz, then I think they are overindulging in proclivities that could end up ultimately having diminishing returns and be a turnoff. Tyler, back to you.
And I was probably a little ham-fisted in my initial thing. I align with you on that, Wade, where you don't rely on this every week. But I was, you know, the emailer was saying that, you know, worried about turning this off, you know, and I'm curious with the caller, you know, are you going to watch again, or would this turn you off completely? Because I know you don't like it, but you know, if this is the way Wade's explaining it, does that alter it for you?
If this was like once every 18 months, I think that'd be great. And actually, I think it would be a lot more effective too. Because I mean, just seeing, if you have like every month women blading and everything, it's just gonna, first of all, just lose its impact a little bit, and second of all, it was,
right.
I don't know, yeah. So
yeah,
but it's not like a turn off where I would turn it, you know, and I've seen deathmatch. It's not like I'm offended or anything. My brother's been to CZW matches and things like this, and death matches and everything. So it's not like I've never seen this kind of stuff. It's just, I don't know. It's just really not for me anymore. And I don't know. That's just more my opinion, I guess.
No, I think it's good. I think you're the median opinion. I know, and I say at the top of the show, I like these kind of matches, and I know I'm kind of a weirdo for that. So you and Wade are more aligned on what the median audience is. So, you know, I just took it as you see this once, and from the emailer, you see this once, and then the show's, you know, you turn it off forever. And I don't think that's the problem. That's kind of more my what my opinion was. So,
yeah,
they need to be careful, and this is one thing. You know, I think you have Shaq 1 week wrestling, and then you have this another week, and that in a weird 2021 sort of way is like the way to kind of give something to everybody, and you don't want to do any of those things too much, and you just kind of want to spread them out and have a little bit of variety for everybody. I think it's kind of the overall thesis that Tony Khan's having. But yeah, I agree that he's definitely into stuff that he's wanted to do since he was a kid, and you know, he needs to be more of a promoter going forward.
Yeah, you
definitely
see his love for kind of that ECW era and a lot of his booking and everything. I don't know. It's, but I don't know. I think part of it, though, is the wrestling industry has sort of outgrown some of that. So I don't know. That's, like I said, it's my personal opinion. But anyway, that was about it.
Great. Kevin, I'm glad you chimed in. Good to hear from you. Call again.
All right, great. Thank you. Bye.
Yep, you bet. Yeah, the idea that the wrestling industry has outgrown it is an interesting way to frame that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea is WWE became PG, and they talked about it incessantly. We're PG. And it got WWE some big deals, like some big money deals. And, I mean, we can be critical of it, and you can disagree with my assessment that being PG was part of paving the road to these billion-dollar deals with Peacock and Fox and NBC Universal and all the sponsors that they have and Snickers and on and on. Like, that was – it was a strategy. I did a cover story on this a handful of weeks back about, you know, this is the Fox deal and the Peacock deal. These things are culminations of – you know, 15 years of rebranding what WWE was compared to when Vince McMahon was on HBO and you know, slapping notes out of the interviewer's hands and trying to defend the brand against accusations that Vince McMahon was cavalier about the lives of the wrestlers who were dying young. That was the narrative of what WWE was in the early 2000s. And John Cena and going PG and talking incessantly about charity and having everyone heels and faces wear T-shirts and armbands for the most recent charity, and having Stephanie retweet Biz Stone saying the founder of Twitter saying, you know, is the new marketing. What's another word for charity? I'm just
What foundation?
Okay. Stephanie McMahon, I think it's Biz Stone. Marketing. If I type all that in, it'll come up in a headline. Philanthropy is the future of marketing. She was at a conference and she retweeted, or she quoted Stone, the co-founder of Twitter, saying, "Philanthropy is the future of marketing. It's the way brands are going to win." And obnoxiously, even though she wasn't out of characters. Well, actually, maybe back then it was only 144. But she said R, not A-R-E, and two, like number two instead of T-W-O or T-O. But yeah, philanthropy is the future of marketing. It's the way brands are going to win. I know the restaurant that I was at and the place I was sitting and who I was with when I spit out my water when I read her retweet of that on March 28th, 2015. And yet that is – and by the way, if you Google it and you look up her tweet – my replies are like all over it, are all over that. I was like, oh my God, you don't say that out loud, Stephanie. That you say with your rich friends behind closed doors. So that approach was a strategy, and it wasn't an accident, and it paid off. But AEW is looking, to wind it back to that, they want to be different than WWE. They're trying to bring back the lapsed fans, the people who wrestling isn't cool anymore. They love the Attitude Era. They love ECW. And Tony Khan wants to be that guy. And so that is also a marketing strategy. And there are going to be people who jump off, you know, who get off on the next bus stop. And Tony is hoping there's more people waiting to get on the bus and get off by doing this. And it differentiates him. But it's a risk. And again, the question is he thinking it through, or is he indulging in his proclivities. And so that time will tell. And I think we've gotten mixed signals in the last, 18 months of Dynamite, how much is strategy and well thought out and how much is, wouldn't it be cool if I got to do this with these guys? I think this is a strategy combined with what he likes. So anyway, yeah. Tyler, anything else on that?
No, I agree. I think it's definitely leaning more towards what he wants to do, and we'll get a rosier picture in the coming years. But I agree, and I think there's an audience for it. But yeah, it's a fine line you got to walk, and that's a tough spot to be in. To if any of us had the money and the power that Tony Khan has, it's not an enviable position for me to be in. I probably wouldn't do it, but. Yeah, I kind of understand where he's at mentally and how you kind of have to be more Vince McMahon than you want to be in some of those situations. So we'll see.
Yep, makes sense. All right, I made reference to that email that was along the same lines. JB from Detroit said, do you think the Thunder Rosa Britt Baker feud had a well-defined enough history and a good enough story to main event an episode of Dynamite? And I think that's a really good question because Tony Khan – thinks it did. It was a culmination of I don't know how many months he said, but several months, a culmination of several months of storyline. I didn't feel that way, and you didn't. That was one of your main criticisms of this is, hey, would have been nice if you're going to deliver this kind of match if the tone leading into it. And I think that does play into Tony Khan thinks about this constantly, and he has a photographic memory for everything that he's had on every show. I remember interviewing Gabe Sapolsky early on in his run as ROH booker, and I asked him in a Torchstock interview in the 2000s, do you remember every match on every show and your thoughts on the match order and the angles and the – and he's like, I can walk through every single match on every single show I've ever promoted in order and tell you the date. Like, and no, that – changes over time. I used to be able to do that with every newsletter I published, and now I publish 1,712, and I have, it becomes more of a blur. It's harder to do, but early on he did, and Tony's at that stage. He knows every, he'll tell you, like, oh, I thought this pay-per-view was a little better than this other one because of this one thing I did in this, an hour, 24 minutes into the, and I thought that fourth match was better than the fourth match in the other one. Like, he has this all worked out. The problem is you don't want to book for him. He shouldn't book for himself in his mindset. He's got to book for the person who watches Dynamite Tours a week, doesn't think another minute about it for 6 days and 22 hours. And then they tune back in, and it's your job to get them revved up and back in because they have the other lives are leading, the other things going on in their life. So this might have been a window into the fact that in his mind, this was a classic rivalry as a four-month story payoff in one of the greatest and most memorable main event matches ever on Dynamite. That's what he called it, a culmination of a classic rivalry as a four-month story paid off. They didn't do a good job communicating a four-month story paying off in a classic rivalry on this show or last week when building up to it.
Yeah. I would say I would push back a little bit on the overall theme of the framing of the question. That I think there's definitely been worse stories that have been in the main event of episodes of Dynamite. This is definitely not the best story to end an episode of Dynamite. For example, last week we had the end of the Inner Circle and MJF, and that's been a story that's been told for a long time. That feels like it's worth the main event. If you compare those two, obviously this story was not told as well. I do think this is one of the better women's feuds that, AEW has had. And yes, there's not been a ton. I did think this would culminate in that tournament for the number one contender spot, and then the winner of this feud would go on and, face Sheeta for the belt, and that didn't happen, and then they kind of shoehorned it in here. So I did think that was a bit odd from a booking standpoint, but yeah, I mean, if you take the Christian thing and then what Tony said about this, I think he likes, these two women and thinks they're great workers, and he likes Christian a lot, and when he really, really likes something, he can kind of oversell a little bit. And, I think from what we were talking about in the previous question, that he just needs to kind of – I hate to tell anyone to do their job, but, I think he'll learn that what he likes is not what everyone likes. And I can be guilty of that too, That's why I try and preface everything. When I really like something I know not everyone else is going to like, I try and preface that, hey, I really like this. So not that you can do that if you're Tony Khan, but yeah, I think that's definitely a trait that he has at the moment.
Yeah. All right, JB also adds, do you think the match lived up to its stipulation and main event placement? Yes. I mean, you know, you can quibble with what does lights out mean and should it feel more separate from an official match with a referee and, you know, should you turn the lights off and on to signify it's the end of the official show and this is totally not sanctioned. I mean, it is just kind of flippantly using the term. But, of course, it lived up to the main event placement. I mean, in the sense of what they did from bell to bell.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the better main events in a long, long time from an in-match standpoint and excitement and all that stuff. So, yeah, I think that – and, yeah, I agree. The lights out thing is a little – you know, you said it earlier, it's just kind of, you know, stretches your sanity as a wrestling fan to be like, okay, well, here's Justin Roberts still, you know, we've talked about that already, but yeah, it's overdone.
All right. And JB finally says, what is the next women's feud you could see main eventing a Dynamite? And if you had to predict, what would be the first women's feud to main event in AEW pay-per-view? As always, love the show and go VIP.
Well, I think, you know, we've Double or Nothing coming up. I think, you know, if depending what Rosa's situation is with NWA and obviously they're coming back and, you know, she won this match that I thought was a little surprising. You know, I think she has a shot at Cheetah for the belt. She's earned that. I mean, that seemed like a number one contenders match if there was ever going to be one. And I could see that headlining an episode of a Dynamite coming up. And then, you know, to main event a pay-per-view, you know, bluntly, I don't think there's any woman on the roster that you can combine right now to main event a pay-per-view. You know, I think Baker as a character and as a worker has really, I think there's a spot where her versus somebody that you can bring in and there's lots of talented women, you know, let's say in a crazy world where Charlotte Flair does her TV show and leaves WWE and is a free agent somehow. And she comes in and it's her and Britt Baker. I think you could easily main event a pay-per-view with one other known woman outside the business, outside of the company at the moment and with Britt Baker or something. But I think we'll see it eventually. And I think just like the women's division has naturally come along and become, you know, not the strong point of the show, but it's definitely something I'm looking forward to see every week and see them develop on the YouTube shows and whatnot. You know, I think it'll happen naturally and it'll be awesome when it does.
Crispy in Long Island said, I just wanted to give credit to Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker for pulling off such a brutal TV match. You can make the case that it was more effective than Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley in the sense that this was a very satisfying finish. Kudos to them. Yes, if you consider the finish, this was better. It was also more, you know, more brutal. I mean, they both were brutal. I mean, they both had their moments, but yeah. All right. Let's hit another a separate topic from that. We'll go to Kevin in North Carolina. I know my household is a bit partial to the Lucha Brothers, but what is the point of doing the arm snap if Cody wasn't even going to sell it at all? It's a lot like Shana's arm stomp. It looks devastating and should be sold accordingly. Why didn't they give this match more build to let Cody do what he excels at and talk it up? I guess that Tony sees more in Ray, but with the swagger and personality that Penta has, it is disappointing that he hasn't been booked better. I know everyone can't be pushed all the time, but it feels like they dropped the ball with Penta. Okay, he's got other things to say. The finish of that match is interesting. I'm fine with it. I think Cody losing should not become common. I don't want him overcompensating for being executive VP, or I don't want to be, you know, Triple H or Eric Embry, to pull an 80s reference out, the booker who overbooks himself, or Jeff Jarrett, or what, Dusty Rhodes, whatever. Like, no, just book yourself that's in a way that's appropriate for the star level you have and where you are on the roster, and no one's going to complain. Or people will complain anyway, but don't worry about it. I'm fine with Cody beating Penta and Penta getting his seat back after the match. I wish they didn't do that twice on the same show in the same hour. But, I mean, it's fine. I mean, you're not going to build the company around Penta. But a Cody Penta feud's cool, and Penta can get his heat back in other ways. I can absolutely listen to an argument and not think you're crazy if you go, Penta is a tag wrestler who hasn't been firmly established as a single star. Having Cody beat him in the first match defines him down in a way that kind of takes the wind out of his sails before it gets started. I think they were in a conundrum a little bit, because I think that's a valid argument too. But I just don't want Cody, who ultimately in the next 3-4 years, I think is more important than Penta, to be doing a job just to try to give Penta a boost. I think there's other ways to give Penta a boost than beating Cody in the first match that they have a week after their first angle. So I'm okay with it. Ideally, they would have done other things to get build up Penta, so it didn't seem quite so shocking to see him lose in his first kind of elevation here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, Cody had to win this match the way you're, you know, yeah, for the health of the company. And he's got to be a guy who on pay-per-views can have meaningful matches with people again, like he did, you know, when the company started. I feel like that's been a part of the company that's been lacking, you know, the last 6-9 months. So, yeah, I mean, Pentagon, you can always kind of reheat up with, you know, you can have him beat Angelico next week too, and then the brothers can both beat him, or, you know, whatever, like that Rey Fénix and Angelico match. Was a good match, like you said earlier, and it's good to establish people that are getting wins against people that are not nameless people. So, yeah, I mean, and then the thing with Cody not selling the arm drag, and I mean, that happens in every wrestling match in every company. So, unfortunately, there's some level where you have to kind of just look past that stuff selectively to keep your sanity as a wrestling fan. So I agree with the emailers. I'm not trying to disregard their opinion. It's just, you know, when you have a match that doesn't happen a lot, that those are some of the greatest matches that you'll ever see. And it's hard to do. And that's why those wrestlers that have that good in-ring psychology are loved. And, you know, it got dropped there. But, yeah, the overall sentiment is Cody needs a win and Pentagon, you know, he got his heat back, and it is what it is. And yeah, everything you said, I agree.
Very good. Yeah. So his next topic, why would just one interruption suffice when you can have two interruptions in the same? At least he didn't actually say anything tonight. An overall confusing segment. No clue as to where they're going with any of these seven guys. So I do have a clue. They want Archer to be a heel with Jake. Which is fine. I think he can work as a babyface or a heel. I like him a little better as a heel, and I haven't assessed the heel face dynamic right now with the addition of Christian and kind of the lay of the land of who's available. But just don't turn Archer anymore. You know, I mean, he's got to. If this is him being a heel, and I think it is, like 2-3 years, no more turns. You know, I mean, you got to commit to that and turn other people or shuffle the roster in other ways. So they're setting up Darby against Archer, which is great. I want to see that. And they're setting up Brian Cage against Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks. And I'm fine with that too. I think Brian Cage can be a good babyface. You know, they have plenty of heels, and a new one in Archer. So a new one again, I guess, I don't know. So they set up a angle there too. You know, I think Cage showing respect to Sting is a way to turn Cage babyface, and then it's solidified when he resists the pushback of his team members, and he came across as independent-minded. And so I don't know. I mean, I thought it was pretty self-evident what they were doing there. I mean, I get that was too much happening in one segment. Okay, fair enough. You could have split it up into two and interviewed Sting and Darby separately, but I don't know. I mean, every now and then throwing that much in there, we'll make fun of it, but I didn't think it was that big of a deal.
Yeah, I think, again, my earlier point on this was, you know, I think people see Tony call out for Sting and he's on the stage and they just like immediately check out because they're so over this type of segment, and then they don't, you know, you lose a lot of retention. It's like when you're reading a book and you're four pages in and you're like, oh, what did I just read?
Oh,
so
God,
I think it's a little bit of that, or driving home. You don't know where, you know, if you're driving or not, but.
The worst is audiobooks. I do that for audiobooks. Like,
yeah,
oh my God, how long has my mind been wandering and I don't know what's going on? Who is that character again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think a little bit of that is happening with a lot of people, not just the emailer on this. And, you know, I agree. I think it's pretty straightforward. You know, I think there might even be a Cage and Sting versus Hobbs and Stark kind of match that they can get out of this. Not that I love that idea, but it would solidify Cage as a babyface, and that's fine because he's kind of been doing nothing. And then Archer Darby's great. I think in general, this segment will be forgotten, but it should bear some good fruit in terms of matches in the future.
There's weeks that I feel like I'm harder on AEW than it seems like the consensus, or not, there's never consensus, but the majority view. And then there's weeks where I feel like I'm more into what they did and mm-hmm. not making excuses for, but kind of like trying to understand the framing and seeing that in a conundrum, they took a legitimate approach that might be better than the other option. And that seems to be my take mostly on this show. Compared to some of the calls and emails. Kevin also said, I know a lot of people don't like garbage matches, but that main event was the match of the night. I've been a big Rosa fan, but Britt took an ass whooping and ended up shining a defeat tonight. It was a great ending to a not-so-great show. I'm hopeful NXT does move to Tuesdays, and that helps Tony decide to slow it down. There is that, you know, the idea of does the show get better if they're not, you know, worried about every minute of the show. which Tony is, you know, I mean, he admittedly is. He's hyper aware to the point that, you know, they sometimes go to breaks. You know, the announcers go, we're going to go to a mm-hmm. Jim Ross, by the way, dropped restaurant quality tonight, didn't he?
He did. I mean, maybe that was a post-production thing, because you could tell the, you know, Tony's voiceover was when he cut in, you know, at post-production to be like, oh, we're going to break. Yeah, maybe it was because of that for a lot of those, because they weren't sure when the break was actually going to happen.
But. Oh, right, yeah. And, Tony is, like, they'll have the announcer say, we're going to be going to split screen, or mm-hmm. they say picture-in-picture, but it's split screen. we're going to go to a picture-in-picture break, and it'll be, like, 40 seconds before they do, because Tony's watching NXT, and he wants to time it so that their break, you know, whatever his strategy is, it coincides mm-hmm. in the way that he wants with NXT.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think there is a chance that Tony slows down a little bit, and NXT too, frankly, and that the shows end up better because they're not, you know, hyper sensitive to the channel flipping fans.
Yeah,
my chair knocked over my water, but it has a little bit. We're good.
Yeah, right. hopefully so.
Yes. All right, let's go next to Zach in Texas. Do you guess whether Zach loved the show or thought it was a bad show, Tyler?
I don't remember Zach.
Zach in Texas is going to lead with a great episode of Dynamite. They serve him, and that's fine. You know the AEW is aiming for people like Zach, and Zach is a satisfied Dynamite fan. He said, "I have to start by giving Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker a hand. That match was so good. Britt really hit a gusher. That was quite the crimson mash he had going. I was also genuinely shocked at the outcome. I thought this was Britt's match to lose. Either way, that's a statement match for the AEW Women's Division. Speaking of statements, MJF and Tully Blanchard took us all to promo class. Their promos were fantastic, particularly MJF. He satisfactorily explained his entire plan regarding the Inner Circle, and it made perfect sense. I really appreciate AEW rewarding fans for paying attention to the details like MJF and Double S Shawn Spears gambling last week. Mox and A. Kingston had another good promo. Their chemistry is so natural and funny. Christian cut a good promo, too. Do you think him removing himself from title contention until he wins a few matches is enough to tamp down the concern with him?" So a lot there, Zach. You liked the main event. We did, too. You liked MJF and Tully. We did, too. I really liked Tully. Tully's as good at promos in his 70s as he was in his 30s. Like, there's a Tully Blanchard promo, and he can deliver it, and he did. I assume he's got his vaccinations because he was one of the people who was always in a mask and always separate from everybody else, and I think that changed how they used him. Mm-hmm. And it's really stood out. Actually, it timed out well that you're establishing a new faction, and Tully, who's always kind of been on his own, isolated from other people, socially spaced, or in a booth with two other guys, but not, you know, like, he was in the ring and with a group and just had a command of the microphone. And he's not going to be the best. He's never going to win best promo, but he's always a good promo. And there's always a seriousness and an agenda to what he says and an efficiency of words. And I thought it was, as Zach said, promo class with Tully probably cutting his best promo yet for AEW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in short and sweet, I like the, you know, he started his career, or the prime of his career was, you know, with the best group, and he's going to end his career with the best group. You know, short and sweet, and it that just was the mission statement for that group. I thought it was effective.
Yes, although, you know, his promo's as good now as it was 34 years ago. Maybe in mm-hmm. 15 years, is, you know, or 20 years, he's in his 90s, and he's on some other wrestling show going, well, I thought my last group that I had was going to be the best, but this one's even better.
Yeah.
All
there
right.
You go.
So saying he's removing himself from title contention until he wins a few matches. Yes. Good. I mean,
mm-hmm.
yes. Win some matches, and, you know, Edge is facing a little bit of that too. It's like, well, you want to rumble, but can we see you wrestle? And we'll get that tomorrow. Friday night on SmackDown, at least a little bit of that. Yeah. I mean, I think that helps. I think it's almost necessary, to win a few matches. You know, you declare who you have your eye on, but, and it's good for ratings. You know, if they're paying Christian big money and he wants to prove he is not retired, and not phoning it in, and go out and be the workhorse and have a good match, there's certainly plenty of people that he can have good matches with if he's as good as he thinks and says he is.
Yeah, especially with the AEW audience. I mean, you know, if people are concerned about you and you go out and have, you know, a barn burner with Pentagon or Ray Phoenix or Cody or whatever, whoever you want to put him against, you know, he does a great job. That's going to really alleviate some of the concern that a lot of people have, I would think.
Yep. All right. I don't want to repeat ourselves too much here. We got a lot of emails. Kyle in Tinley Park, Illinois says, QT Marshall is indie. He has no business being in AEW. He kind of seems like he's doing a parody of a wrestler or something. Is there anyone else on the roster that falls into this category for you? And do you think the looseness of AEW's backstage environment adds to this? I know WWE's backstage environment is said to be on the total other side of the fence, but I can't say anyone in WWE seems like they should be on an indie show in a gym in front of 50 people. Do you think AEW would benefit from a slightly tighter backstage environment and more criticism from management? Thanks. Tyler.
Yeah, probably so. I have not been to either, so I want to make sure that's clear. So I am, you know, only going from what I see on the TV screen. I would say, you know, the way they portray people in WWE, you know, like Matt Riddle, for example, that's more of a writing thing. I don't think he's a total joke backstage or anything like that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you can tell the ship is a little looser in good ways and bad ways at AEW compared to WWE. So, you know, like anything in life, it has its pros and cons. I'm sure the people are a lot happier. The employees are a lot happier at AEW than they are at WWE from a creative standpoint and, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, I think it's more of a QT Marshall is obviously good friends with Cody, and that is leading to him being on TV a lot. And this is, you know, it's just not working for anybody. And it's more of those things where I don't know if this would happen in WWE that, you know, Triple H's random friend would be on NXT doing something like this. And yeah, so that's a problem. And yeah, I very much like the comparison that he's doing an impression of a wrestler. I think that's very funny. So I'm going to steal that from the emailer.
Yes. Yes. I will name out other indie-rific candidates and you guys can choose for yourself. If it applies, Chuck Taylor, Peter Avalon, Michael Nakazawa, Brandon Cutler, Joey Janela. That would be my initial list of that wrestlers who fans might perceive as indie-rific and belonging in a crowd of, you know, 50 to 500 and not in front of a million people on TNT. And most of them are like friends of people in management, believe it or not.
Yeah. Is that yours or the emailer's list?
Oh, my list.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Janela certainly looks like a guy who fits that bill. I think, you know, in the ring, I think he's got a lot more than those other guys, has a lot of personality. But again, that's my bias coming through. So I want to be clear about that again. But yeah, I mean, Peter Avalon and Nakazawa are two that just scream guys that I can't believe are on TV, you know, a lot. Cutler's at least tall. And who was your first one there?
Chucky T.
Chuck Taylor. Yeah, I mean, I think he's got the chops in the ring, but yeah, his stuff is a little on the juvenile side. I think he could be a guy who never wins a match in WWE, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him there. But yeah, Avalon, QT Marshall are pretty offensive to me personally, being on the screen. So
I think I've only seen Chuck Taylor, and I only saw Chuck Taylor like in person once, and he was like at an indie show in Iowa, and it was just like he just owned it in. And it, you know, I mean, he wasn't well known there, and it was fine, and he had a lot of acclaim for the work he did in California and PWG and stuff, and I get that, but he just kind of phoned it in. And then like I've just seen him do just lazy ass shit in the ring, like a weak whips into the rope and cartoonish bumps and that kind of thing. And it's, you know, I mean, he's funny on Twitter, but yeah, indie-rific sounds derogatory, and to a degree it is if you're over pushed, but there's nothing wrong with a little indie-rific, a dose of indie-rificness if it's used in the right place on a national TV show. I don't think every one of those guys should be cut and never used, but you have to be careful how you use them and how many of them you use. And sometimes it's best to reframe yourself from what worked on an indie show and go, what's going to work with a national audience, and alter your gimmick and your presentation.
Yeah, especially when you have two YouTube shows, so you could use them there and not put them on cable TV also.
Yeah.
Which they do mostly, but.
Yep, absolutely. All right, I'll end here. We got long. A show like this, no surprise. we'd get a lot of, that we had a lot to talk about. Maybe I'm forgetting stuff too. But Sean in No City Sign. Sean, oh, in Austin, there it is. In the I thought I saw a city. It's in the subject line. Sean from Austin, Texas. Anytime Don Callis and MJF cut promos, my eyes stay glued to the TV. Some may disagree with me, but in my opinion, their style of promo is right up there with Roman Reigns. Now to the pinnacle. Not going to lie. I like the name and the group. Even with Sean Spears, looking like he was being drafted to the NBA in 2003 with that suit. Y'all think they will save Inner Circle? What about 2003 in particular? Like, that's kind of random. That's 18 years ago. Was there a particular suit in 2003?
Yeah, that's like the LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh group. So that's just famous.
Okay.
Yeah, but they have very baggy suits. It's very funny.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. Well, good. And it's definitely not random, and I just don't know my dates in NBA. Good. Do y'all think they will save Inner Circle versus the Pinnacle for Double or Nothing? And do you think they'll have another Stadium Stampede match, but with Inner Circle being the babyfaces this time? He's got more. I'll say that. I hope they don't have Stadium Stampede. That was a comedy match. MJF is saying it was move away from that. We never got the version of War Games that got punted and hasn't come back. This belongs in the AEW version of War Games.
Yeah, I agree. The Blood and Guts, I think, was the name. I don't know if they got that trademarked or not. I know that was the joke name for it.
I would
at
like
least,
to change the name.
Yes. Hopefully they will. But, yeah, I mean, that makes total sense, especially on a pay-per-view, you know, not on an episode of Dynamite. That is a match that obviously they will do a good job building to it. And but, you know, right now you could sell that match in 2 months, and I would be there for it. There's a lot of built-in storyline. And, yeah, I think that would be the perfect vessel for this feud to end.
He said, I would like to have seen Ethan Page tonight since his match last week was more or less ruined by audio issues. Yeah, let's not wedge anything more into this episode, but I guess that main event was spectacular. I can't think of a time I've ever seen a women's match with thumbtacks, match of the night for sure. But the question is, who does the stomp better, Seth Rollins or Britt Baker? Anyway, thanks for the great content, and you all have a great night. Thank you, Sean from Austin, for giving us a you all. It feels authentic when someone from Austin does it. The brutality of the women's match is more notable because it was a women's match, and there's a novelty to that. I'm not going to dwell on that in the sense that I don't think we should like judge the booking or the execution different because they're women and not men. But that said, there's no denying that men have had this type of match more often than women over the years. And for people who go, whoa, I can imagine men doing this to each other, but not women, there's more of a novelty factor. That's undeniably a fact. But I don't think it should be done or not done for that reason. I mean, they're professional athletes and they're battling it out and they're going to war in the ring. And so there's going to be blood and guts and blading and thumbtacks. I don't think it's tied to a certain gender. I don't believe, but I think there's more risk, but not enough to have it be a factor that some people might be turned off by women bleeding and using thumbtacks against each other. I feel that's a little outdated to cater to that point of view, even if it does exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think you can tell by my previous statements that I'd be aligned there. And I think the society moves in certain directions, you know, 20 years from now, would this be as shocking? Probably not. But right now, you know, maybe not shocking is not the right word, but, you know, would this be as unique as this was tonight? Probably not. But, you know, this, if you're Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa, you can take advantage of that being the general feeling of society that this is kind of a unique thing to see on TV. And they did it as well as, you know, anyone has done it on TV for this type of match and have the notoriety to be, you know, probably the first woman that a lot of people have seen have a match like this, and they'll never forget that. So I think they took advantage of, you know, how society views this. And yeah, I think that was a positive.
All right, Tyler, tell people about your podcast, your social media, and anything else you want to talk about.
Yeah. So I do the Podcast of Honor every week, which is a VIP podcast here at PW Torch. So me and Ryan Sullivan talk about Ring of Honor every week. It's Ring of Honor focused, as we say. It's a little bit the inverse of The Fix with Todd Martin, hosted by U Wade, which is, you know, a great show that everyone loves on the Torch. You know, we talk a little bit about current events to start the show, and then we do a heavy bit of Ring of Honor on the back end of the show. And, you know, just like with Javier's show, if you are not watching Ring of Honor, we try and, you know, give you the results, keep you up to date, get you primed and just kind of keep you current because there's a lot of wrestling on, and we understand that not everyone can watch everything. But, you know, if you want to keep up to date on Ring of Honor, you can listen to us and, you know, hear our opinions on other things. And obviously do the written report every week, opposite of you, on Dynamite, and doing special coverage this week on New Japan Cup with some other people at the Torch. So you can check that out. And I also covered the first episode of Elevation on Monday, which was notable in some ways. So, yeah, just if you want to see me writing, it's probably on the Torch any day this week. So
that's right. That's, yeah, you're taking Javier's crown for the workhorse of the Torch.
Yeah, so yeah. He can keep it, I think. But no, it's good. you know, I would say when, not that everyone should do it, but just as a little PSA, if you can ever just like sit down and write out one episode of TV that you watch, just write it on a Word document. You will definitely get a understanding of how wrestling, you know, it just gives you a different appreciation of wrestling, and you'll see it a lot different. So,
yeah.
You know, I view it so much differently than I did, you know, 18 months ago. So,
expand on that.
Yeah. So, you know, before I watch it, you know, I think a lot of people watch wrestling, you know, you're looking at Twitter and you're, you know, just kind of not like everything, but you know, these matches that you're like, okay, I don't really care about this. You're kind of half-heartedly watching, and you kind of miss a lot of nuance. And you know, before just the construction of a match, and when people talk about psychology, and you kind of hear that ethereally, and you're like, what does that even mean? Does that mean like, oh, when they, you know, eat a finisher, do they kick out? Do they kick out the wrong time? You know, whatever. It just, you watch it, and you understand what a lot of people like yourself talk about when you talk about like, okay, well, you know, the psychology or the pace or the, you know, all these buzzwords that everyone that watches wrestling likes to think that they know. And I'm not saying I'm an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but it just gives you, you know, an understanding of how much work goes into these matches and how someone who is a rookie and someone who's been wrestling for, you know, 1, 2, 3 years, how much different they are than someone who wrestles 15 years and how a match is constructed, how certain cues are hit perfectly, and how just how professional basically everyone that you see on television is, and how you know, how impressive they all are. And it gives you a different appreciation for what these people are doing week in, week out, day in, day out. And, you know, makes you more critical about storylines, and, you know, it just gives you a better appreciation for the art that you're watching and the TV show you're watching. So, you know, it's helped me appreciate the sport as a fan.
That's really cool.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. Long podcast here. Covered a lot of territory. Tyler, thanks so much. Get back to work. You got other things to do.
Yeah. 5 a.m. wake-up call for New Japan Cup. So I'm very excited.
Oh, my God. All right. Very cool. Yeah. Get some sleep.
Yeah, will do.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.